This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, has Ohio been too aggressive in clearing its voter roll? But first, detecting signs of cancer with a breath test, robotic bats that could shape the future of unmanned aerial vehicles. These are a couple of examples of sensor research that's being conducted at the University of Cincinnati. On Friday, UC hosted Cincinnati's third annual Sensor Community Retreat, which was attended by researchers, community members, and students. Here from UC to talk about sensor development in Cincinnati and the recent retreat are Dr. Rashmi Jha, Associate Professor of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science, Dr. Ryan White, Associate Professor and Ohio Eminent Scholar, Department of Chemistry with a joint appointment in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science, and Dr. Bill Connick, Professor of Chemistry and Director of the Center for Biosensors and Chemical Sensors. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Bill, Rashmi, and Ryan, thank you so much for being here this afternoon. Good to see everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill, talk about this sensor conference. This was the third annual conference. You do these every year. Why is it important to hold these sensor retreats at UC?
Well, we started these retreats because of the tremendous strength in our region in the area of sensors, and in particular at the University of Cincinnati. But in order to leverage this strength, we needed to get people talking because we realized that innovation doesn't happen in isolation. And so the objective of these retreats has been to bring together sensor developers, sensor users, and other stakeholders in order to inspire innovation, lower barriers to collaboration, and also capitalize on emerging opportunities. So in short, what we really want to do is get people talking to each other who don't ordinarily talk to each other. For example, a sensor user and a sensor designer, and create really a platform where we can get people to match their expertise and capabilities with new directions and needs.
So what is a sensor, and how are these typically used?
Well, a sensor essentially will provide information about the presence or the condition or the environment that something is in. And so this could be, for example, a sensor that detects a chemical or detects some physical property like temperature or motion. So the implementation and use of sensors is really incredibly diverse. They're all around us and in our everyday life. Most people are very familiar, for example, with a sensor that monitors their heart rate.
So they're all around us. We might not realize it.
That's right.
Now, what have been some of the important outcomes of these previous retreats and gatherings?
Well, I think without doubt, the most important outcome from these retreats has been collaborations. And so new interactions between, again, individuals who might not normally cross paths that have led to, you know, new approaches to tackling problems. So a couple of examples from our most recent retreat would be the work, a collaboration between Professors Vanderlust, who's in the Department of Biology at the University of Cincinnati, and Professors Kumar and Vermuri, who are in the College of Engineering at the University of Cincinnati. And what they're doing is they're using knowledge and new information about how bats navigate in the dark, complete darkness, in swarms without running into each other, simply using sonar, and how they do that navigation. They're using that to inform the development of algorithms that will allow pilots to fly drones more effectively.
Rashmi, you were part of that collaboration, aren't you?
Yes, I'm also. Thank you.
Yes. So tell us a little bit more about that. I mean, what makes a bat? Why a bat?
So, biologically inspired computing is something very exciting for us because if you look at it, biological brain does tremendous amount of computing at a very low energy consumption. So a bat can navigate kilometers of area without needing any external, support. So the question we are trying to understand is how bat is capable of doing it. And we have read literature on place cells. So place cells in brain help navigation of bat. So the question is how we can model the place cell and implement it in a drone, which can help it navigate not only even in the GPS denied areas. So we're trying to model the place cells, which are biological cells in our brain, help us in navigation in a very energy efficient way, and then implement it on drone. So that's why we call it bat drone.
How often do you look to nature and to biology in developing sensors?
I think constantly, right? I mean, biology gives us wonderful recognition abilities that have evolved over millions of years. And so to be able to use that to develop sensors with extreme specificity and sensitivity is great.
Now, Ryan, you work with other researchers from chemistry, engineering, and medicine. Can you talk about why it's so important for there to be researchers from different backgrounds involved in work on sensors?
Sure. I think this goes back to sort of the need of this type of retreat to bring people together. You know, we can come up with something interesting in our lab that might be scientifically interesting, but we need to detect things that people want to detect. What does the end user want to detect? And how do we put that in a package that's usable? So this requires collaborating with physicians that want to look for a certain molecule or biomarker and collaborating with engineers to take sort of the basic science we're doing at the sensor level and translate it to a usable device.
Again, 513-419-7100. If you have any questions about sensors and would like to join our conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Rashmi, your work focuses a lot on the data that sensors collect, how to store it, how to use it. Now, how big are the sensors that you and your team are working on in size, and how much information can they not only hold, but how much information can they also process?
Yeah, so sensors on wearable platforms or sensors on mobile platforms such as drones or UAVs, they can collect gigabytes of data. And that data needs to be processed in real time for the system to be able to make decisions. Now, conventional computing platforms, they are not able to do this because they reach the computational bottlenecks. So we try to take our inspiration from the brain. Brain is a very energy-efficient computing machine that all biological systems have. So how can we borrow the computing paradigms of the brain, implement it in these very energy-constrained systems to be able to process those data and be able to make decisions out of them?
Can you talk about how it's possible for sensors to learn from the data they're collecting? You make the comparison to the brain. How do sensors actually learn from this data?
So, you know, when sensors collect a lot of data, and if the processing is very compute resource intensive, they have to transmit the data to the cloud, and cloud computers, they would do the processing. So transmission of data takes a lot of energy. So if we have learning on sensor itself, then sensors can figure out when it is time to transmit the data, and then when they can locally do computing. So that way they can conserve energy. Also, many a times, sensor is not collecting the right data. So sensor should be able to figure out when the data is meaningful and when the data is spurious or noisy. So based on that, it should be able to make decisions. So by imparting learning in this type of system, we should be able to make those decisions.
What are the possibilities with sensors, Bill? I mean, from what I'm hearing, it sounds like the possibilities are endless with what you can do with a sensor.
I think that's absolutely true. The potential for sensors is extraordinary, and I think in our lives, their role is just going to grow and grow. And I think that in the media and in fiction, we see sensors, we see all kinds of interesting things depicted using sensors, and for a large part, that could be the reality in the future.
Can you give us an example of, say, the most simple type of sensor that's out there to the most complex type of sensor?
Well, the sort of sensor that I think everyone's familiar with would be just a thermometer. Mm-hmm. So just telling
us... Oh, that qualifies as a sensor.
Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah. Just telling us about the temperature. But sophisticated sensors, one of the topics that came up at our recent retreat was the interaction of humans with robots. And so how does a robot interpret what a human is doing so that a robot knows how to respond? And that's incredibly complex to read the face of a person and analyze the motions of that person to predict what it is that they're going to do so that a robot doesn't hurt that person or moves in an appropriate manner.
Rashmi, can you give us some examples of how the sensors that you're working on developing could affect our daily lives, and from, say, our safety to our security to our physical health?
One of the type of sensors that we're working on is, a lot of people have these kneecaps. So in the kneecaps, we are trying to embed accelerometers, which is a type of motion sensor, and then using the platform to understand if the knee motion, activity of the person by understanding the knee motion, and to be able to predict if the person is tired or the activities he's doing is going to injure him, or whatever he's doing is appropriate for him.
So you can put knee sensors in somebody and they can tell you when your knees are going to wear out?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So that's something we are doing. And then as Bill was saying, simple example of sensors could be camera. Our eyes are image sensors. So if you are trying to make a robot which can interact with human beings, cameras are going to be that robot's sensor. So that robot should be able to understand people's, different types of behavior and being able to learn from it. So those are some of the things that we're looking into.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, in your case, can you give us some examples of some of the bigger world and human benefits of the sensor research that you're doing?
Sure. So we developed sensors to study a range of systems in biology. So ranging from how cells in your brain communicate with each other, through to sensors to monitor therapeutics in real time to maintain effective dosage. And so in terms of the brain chemistry, we're interested in looking at cells that have mainly been overlooked or more recently have been realized to be much more important in brain function. And so if we can understand how those cells communicate with neurons and other cell types in the brain and how that breaks down when you look at a disease model, you can start to think about new therapeutic paradigms and how to treat things like developmental disorders, where you're actually aiming at recovering healthy behavior or phenotype in the brain.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us with your questions at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Here from UC to talk about sensor development in Cincinnati and the recent sensor community retreat are Dr. Rashmi Jha, Associate Professor of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science, Dr. Ryan White, Associate Professor and Ohio Eminent Scholar, Department of Chemistry, with a joint appointment in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science, and Dr. Bill Connick, Professor of Chemistry and Director of the Center for Biosensors and Chemical Sensors. You can join us with your questions, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We got a call from Jim, and he was wondering if there was a relationship with the sensor directorate at the Air Force Research Lab at Wright-Patterson.
Yes. We have, we are trying to understand some of the security threats in sensory systems, and for that we work with some researchers at the Census Directorate in Wright-Patterson.
Mm-hmm. How much work do you do with the military? Is it a big part of what you're doing?
Yeah, for us, there is a project which is called DAGSI, Dayton Area Graduate Scholarship Program. So through that, we can get a student that works both at Wright-Patt as well as with the university. So we have a student who is working with the Wright-Patterson, few students actually, and we are interested in understanding what are the security and threats in sensors if, adversary attacks your sensors and starts corrupting your data. Then in that regard, how do you still survive? So those type of things, we are looking into it. And then how to ensure trust and security in a sensory platform. So those are some of the areas.
You know, you're talking about a lot of really crucial matters, some matters even pertaining to life and death here. I mean, how much work goes into creating a sensor?
I think it spans a lot of disciplines, right? Just the interdisciplinary nature, again, understanding what are the targets of interest to detect, to how do we do it in a window that's important in terms of levels of that contaminant or drug or whatever it is we're deciding to detect. So I think the research is sort of it's almost endless in what you can fine tune to meet the analytical needs of the end user.
And how much testing goes into creating a sensor? I mean, how long does it usually take before the sensor actually becomes reality?
I think this is probably one of the things that's probably not so well understood by the public is just how difficult it is to take a sensor from a laboratory project, so proof of concept and development of an idea, to a device that you can use in the real world. There's just that road from proving it in the laboratory to getting it to the marketplace is very long and challenging. And there are many technologies that are really exciting but have never made it to the marketplace because of various factors. And in fact, that was one of the presentations at our retreat focused on the challenges associated with doing exactly that.
What kind of response did you get to the retreat?
So far, it's been very positive feedback. I think that we focused a lot on networking, so really encouraging dialogue. And, I think, for example, as Ryan pointed out, he met a lot of new people and some of whom he's going to be following up on as possible collaborators. I think that that's one of the greatest outcomes is making the connections between people.
I think also the connection with industry, that's something you don't see on a day-to-day basis on the college campus, but I think meeting people who are out there developing sensors at the commercial level and seeing, again, what are some of the challenges with transitioning from a nice, clean, controlled laboratory setting to real-world situations. And meeting those people and people who have done it in the past is, I think, very helpful in helping direct our research.
Yeah. What's the biggest project that you're working on right now, Ryan?
Well, I think we have a few, but we are working with a couple people on doing this transition. So we're developing sensors for antibiotic detection. The idea is to be able to do rapid point of care detection in an ER room where a patient is undergoing septic shock, for example. And so how do we take the sensor chemistries we've developed and make it robust enough to function in that environment so that the physician can make that decision, okay, these are the antibiotic this patient's currently on, so we know we need to treat them with something different.
Okay, so it would help him know what he's on. Would it also help determine what might be the best antibiotic to use in a certain situation?
That's right. I think the idea is, again, someone who is in the hospital undergoing this septic shock, they have been treated with some antibiotic, not wanting to induce or create more resistant strains, can we treat them immediately with the antibiotic that would be most helpful or most effective.
How long does it usually take to get a sensor to market?
I think we learned about this at the retreat. I mean, there's several routes you can take through the FDA, I think, and I think it can range from on the short scale, 2 to 5 years, maybe it was said. But wow. I think it really, I think the sensor – the performance has to be pretty mature to even get to that point. So
yeah, we're in the middle of a project that we're working on trying to take to market. And yeah, we're at about the 2-year mark right now, and we've got another good couple of years to go, I think.
So you wish people understood how painstaking this is.
Yeah, that's challenging, and the expertise that you need to bring to bear to really take it from the laboratory where, Ryan emphasized the basic science that's involved in his research and then to go the next step to get the engineers involved and that will produce a device that could be used tested in a hospital, for example, and then produce something that is compact and marketable. I mean, that's an enormous undertaking.
And I think the years just getting to the point where you're ready to even think about that.
Yes.
Right? So,
what else do you wish the public understood better about sensors, Bill?
Well, I think that's probably the most
important. Probably the biggest one is?
Yeah, it's the biggest one is just how challenging it is to go from. I think the thing I see in fiction is that, sort of the Star Trek, they go away for a couple of hours and come back.
They come up with this idea and there it is.
There's a nice little compact device that's doing this whatever trick it's supposed to be doing. And that's really not how any prototype sensor looks. It has wires sticking out everywhere and it's very rudimentary typically.
Rashmi, can you tell us about the biggest project that you're working on?
So we are working on two major projects. One of them is neuromorphic computing, where we are trying to understand, create a data processing, sensory data processing platform, which is inspired by the paradigms of computing in the brain. Because if you look at it, our eyes, nose, ears, skin is basically a combination of sensors. And our brain does an excellent job of processing all these sensory data. So our objective is to create this data processing platform, which is inspired not only the software aspects, which is artificial intelligence that people are already working, but we want to develop hardware also, which is inspired by neurons and synaptic connections in the brain. So that's our one project, and it's funded by National Science Foundation, and we have collaboration with Information Directorate at Air Force Research Lab in Rome, New York, on this project. And the second project is about cybersecurity in sensors and in general in all types of software and hardware platforms, because it is becoming a big deal. So, and we have funding from National Science Foundation in this area, as well as we collaborate with the Sensors Directorate at Air Force Research Lab in Wright-Patterson Air Force Base on these two projects.
Bill, what makes the sensor community in Cincinnati so distinctive?
Well, I think what makes this this area so special for sensors is the broad strength that we have, and it's really a coincidence of different factors here. First of all, sensors play a key role in the missions of many local, state, and federal government agencies. And so, for example, Cincinnati Greater Water Works relies on sensors to monitor water quality. And then, of course, sensors are important for the missions of NIOSH and the EPA, which are located here in Cincinnati. And then also sensors are important to the Air Force and other military branches, which are represented at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So there's this government-driven interest in sensors in our region. Second, there's really a strong private sector presence that's focused on trying to use sensors to improve quality of life. And so this includes, for example, Procter & Gamble mm-hmm. and Meridian Bioscience. But there also are newer companies such as Ekron Systems, which is developing non-invasive sensors that can help to evaluate physiological performance and dysfunction. And then I think the third strength that we have is really an unusually deep and broad expertise in sensors at the regional universities, in particular at UC. And so this includes just really wide range expertise in cyber and very fundamental level materials development, so smart materials that respond specifically to analytes, but also engineering is very strong, and we're very strong in medicine. So we have experts who are determining what chemicals are signatures of disease. And so if we could develop sensors that could detect those chemicals, we could develop sensors that effectively allow for early detection of disease. So it's really this confluence of these three great strengths in this area that make this such an exciting place to be.
Yeah, there are robotic camps for kids, science camps for kids. How do you get the next generation of sensor researchers going? I mean, what's out there for them?
Well, I actually through the Camille and Henry Dreyfus Foundation, I had a grant to develop a sensors workshop for kids, which is a week long workshop all day. Where kids actually came in and worked with chemicals to develop their own sensors. And then we continued that project through the National Science Foundation. So there are ideas like that are cropping up. We do a lot of outreach at local schools where we do demonstrations showing different chemical phenomena and how they might be exploited in sensing.
So you think the Cincinnati area, that the sensor community is just going to keep growing, and there's a lot of potential in the future for this kind of thing?
I absolutely think that's going to be the case, yes.
Rajmi, what's your feel?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have the whole ecosystem for developing sensor-based sensors as well as things that need sensors here. So I think we have a great opportunity to do those type of things here.
Mm-hmm. Ryan?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, everything Bill and Rashmi said it is great. I mean, one of the things about this area, having connections even with Children's Hospital
yeah.
and the medical school, and there's a lot of opportunity to network and try to tackle big problems.
Well, Bill Rashmi and Ryan, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Dr. Rashmi Jha, Associate Professor of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science. Dr. Ryan White, Associate Professor and Ohio Eminent Scholar, Department of Chemistry with a joint appointment in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science. And Dr. Bill Connick, Professor of Chemistry and Director of the Center for Biosensors and Chemical Sensors.